This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, hi, Carm Capriotto here, the Automotive Aftermarket Podcast Guy. Hey, thanks for subscribing and listening to the Aftermarket's original and premier podcast. Hey, I'm with lead technical trainer and course developer for Delphi Product and Services, Dave Hobbs. Dave has graced the podcast in the past, and we are going to do a series of thought-provoking shows just for you. You most likely have taken a course from Dave, either in person or even on demand. Hey, Dave's tackling comebacks. An unfortunate part of doing business, prevention or minimizing comebacks comes from quality control, high standards, and training. You can find Dave's other podcasts and the key talking points for this episode at remarkableresults.biz/E592. And thanks to our sponsors that make this episode possible for you. The Virtual Apex Experience 2020 is in the record books. And I must say that Virtual Apex lived up to presenting leading edge technical and business management training from some of the industry's best and brightest trainers. Now set your sights on the homecoming in Las Vegas in 2021. Mark your calendar now. November 2nd through the 4th, 2021. Apex. Now more than ever. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. Shopware's shop management system allows customers to review, approve, and pay for their repairs all in one place. Keep your staff and your customers safe while maintaining profits and keeping your customers happy. Learn more at GetShopware.com. Hey, not sure how you listen, but the majority of you do listen mobile. And if you aren't listening on a mobile device, download a free listening app at remarkableresults.biz/listen. Now, there you'll find links to Apple or Google Podcasts, among others. Take the podcast along wherever you go. Hey, don't miss the weekly virtual shop tour every week at aftermarketweekly.com. Now, we talk aftermarket stuff, and we broadcast, yes, a virtual shop tour. Watch all episodes on the web at aftermarketweekly.com. Hey, you're the reason that the Aftermarket's premier podcast has thrived for years with over 800-plus episodes among all our formats. Now, I'm glad you've let the podcast help you broaden your horizons. Now, careful, you may just learn one new thing. Hey, warm welcome everyone to my friend Dave Hobbs, Senior Field Trainer and Curriculum Developer, Delphi Technologies, ASE Master Tech L1 and L3, David.
Yes, my favorite was L3. I don't want to seem like a bragger because I can fail an ASE test, and I've done that on A3, manual transmission and drive lines. I just never did that in the shop. So I grew up a electronics geek. My contemporaries putting cams and, you know, competition pistons and things in their engines when we were in high school, fellow gearheads. I was putting electronic ignition in place of points condensers on my 61 Chevy and my 72 Olds.
You were burning up circuit boards. That's what you were doing.
I loved that stuff. My dad was auto electric. He was a rebuilder of alternators and starters and anything electrical, which was drivability and, of course, lighting accessories, AC, anything that moved, you know, earth movers to garden tractors. We did everything, both drive-in and the across-the-counter rebuilding stuff.
It's been a while that you've been on the show, my friend, and although you recently did an Aftermarket Weekly with me, and you're going to actually do another one because we didn't get to all your topics. And then, so here's what happened. Dave sends me these like 10, like a David Letterman top 10 list. And he goes, here, let's cover that. And I says, well, we only have 5 or 6 minutes on that one show. And I says, and these are all so good. So why don't we just record a couple of them together? And, you know, we can have Dave Hobbs Week here on the show or something like that. We'll put them out. We'll hear you talk, bring all your great wisdom, your ideas, your passion, and we'll just put them out and let the industry love them.
Thank you, Carm. I appreciate that opportunity. Really good to be on your show as always. You build people up. And that's one of the things we'll be talking about in one of these top tens is employee and coworker relations.
Should we tease the audience? In this series, we're going to talk about avoiding comebacks, coworker-employee relationships, right to repair, working with your spouse and your family, excitement about the automotive, about automotive innovations, vehicle communications, data buses, technician morale, technician knowledge, and grandkids. And I'm not sure how they're all going to fit together, but, you know, appreciate as you're listening to this that Dave and Carm are just having a conversation while you're traveling down the road, and you're going to learn something, maybe more than just something, a lot. And we're just going to have fun. You ready to start?
I am.
Avoiding comebacks. Let's do that.
You know, a friend of mine that ran a shop for years and he worked with Delphi as one of our very, very valued consultants and contract trainers, Barry Hoyland. He had another term he called never leaves, comebacks and never leaves. The car that you'd never seem to get right, or the customer doesn't care that much about it. Yeah, keep it 6 months, whatever. And it's, I've seen those. I go past shops all the time and I go, I've seen that car there a while. It's not moved. I don't think it's the employees. I think it's a customer's car. It never left. Couldn't even get a chance to come back.
Yeah, it's parked there 24/7. Yeah.
Yeah. So the comeback is the dreaded term for, you know, that customer whose name is Sam Ting, right? You've heard of that one. I know, kind of copying a little limerick or phrase from George Witt years ago, some of the nuggets of wisdom. He was awesome, awesome management instructor and shop owner. And that's Sam Ting. It's doing the same thing. And that's the comeback. And we tend to get defensive. And I know good shop owners and techs and service advisors watching, listening right now, you got it. You've handled it. You know, you never say things like, we couldn't have possibly done that. You always say, well, we were very interested in this concern. We're sorry you're having problems. Let's take a look at your vehicle, ma'am, sir, and do it right away. Don't schedule it for 2 weeks from Thursday, even though maybe a brake job needs to be scheduled 2 weeks from Thursday, according to your schedule. But a comeback, or Sam Ting doing the same thing it was doing before, that needs to be looked at right away. Or a new thing that customer Everett, last name Cincha, the wit of wit here, no pun intended, when it's doing something different now, ever since you had work done on it. That's where we give the customer the benefit of the doubt to get them off of the offensive and us out of the defensive mode and go to work doing a visual inspection, verifying that customer's concern, and then going to see, is this something we could have knocked loose? Is it something that could be the result of something that did on the car? For a perfect example, I still service my own vehicles, repair my own vehicles. It is like fingernails on a chalkboard when I take my vehicle in. If it has to be like the dead of winter and I don't have a really good heated garage access, which I usually do, but whatever reason, maybe I had an injury. I've actually had injuries to hands or arms and needed to like lay off the wrenching for a bit, and I've hired somebody to do work on my car. But it's really rare. My wife will tell you. It's much to her disagreement sometimes. Just take it somewhere. You're too busy. No, I want to bond with the car. I want to have hands-on experience. So I go into a training classroom and the techs aren't smelling like an animal smells fear. The bear can tell you're scared of the tiger, whatever. I think a lot of techs can tell. You haven't worked on a car in a long time, have you, pal? And then your respect goes right down the tube and they don't want to listen anymore. So at a hub bearing, flake off the encoder ring for the active wheel speed sensor. It's like the second one to do this on this 2013 Malibu I own. It's a hybrid, but that's irrelevant to this story. But so it's had two noisy hub bearings and two flake off the encoder ring. So this is a front one. And so I go to do the job. You know, typically, you know, you're doing this in your own garage or driveway. You're the professional do-it-yourselfer, you know, in your own car. And you're in a hurry or you get interrupted. Stuff that happens in a professional shop as well. And I get all done and I go to back it out of the driveway for a road test. And I hear this little noise. So I'm thinking, well, it's set a couple of days. So maybe it's just a little A little bit of a buildup of a little rust or something on the rotor, brake rotors, but it wasn't that.
As you rationalize, what could it be?
Yeah, so it had a Chewbacca noise, Carm. If you know Star Wars, this was a Chewbacca noise. Although my wife actually, she always tries to find a good side of the story. She says, well, actually it was a kind of a good noise, honey, because it reminded us of our late Chihuahua, which she still mourns, the death of this little Chihuahua we had for like 11 or 12 years. And she won't have another dog because she can't go through the anguish of losing another pet, but it made a little growling noise sometimes under its breath, if you will. And this is what this, I said it's Chewbacca, she said it was Jose, our Chihuahua. And it was definitely an ever since you put the hub bearing on, you're getting this noise. And you could throw it into neutral and it wouldn't make the noise. You could go in reverse, it would. You could be stopping using the brakes and it would make the noise, or you could even put it in low gear and have a decel where the engine lurches forward. So I knew, number one, it was related to the engine motor mounts, you know, shifting to make the noise in one direction or another. And then you could rev the engine up while you were also braking. So tying that into working with your spouse will learn on road trips, which are sometimes road tests, to do things for you. Like, can you go ahead and as you apply the brake coming up to the next stoplight, dear, rev the engine up. They learn to do this. They don't necessarily like to do these things, but they will do them, and they won't question you after a particular period of time. That's the training of your spouse. They train you, you train them. So, you know, honey, go ahead while I'm listening, all power braking while you're braking to a stop, and rev that engine up. It was RPM related, so had the engine shifted a certain direction, and it was RPM related, so I knew, eureka, what I did. I had something, when I took that inner fender skirt down, and I pulled the caliper and all that stuff off to put that hub bearing on, I got something too close to the engine. And it was, when the engine would shift in its mount, it would rub it. So these kind of things happen to anybody. And what it was, this is really ironic, it was a vacuum hose with a little check valve. And it was a stiff vacuum hose. And it went to an air pump, emissions air pump. And there was a little clip. And you could put the hose on one side of the clip or the other. And I put it on the other side, which was too close to the crankshaft pulley harmonic balancer bolt, the bolt that holds the pulley on the front of the engine's crankshaft. And that would, when it, the engine would shift in the mount just right, it would just go ch-ch-ch-ch-ch and make that little Chewbacca or Jose, the Chihuahua noise growling as you slowed to a stop. And it was very discerning, very noisy, very obvious. That kind of example happens in the shop every day. And the customer is just firing, you know, breathing fire out their nose, Carm, when you know, they pay good money. I knew the hub bearing would probably be $300-$400, to have done retail. So yeah, my ABS lights off and, or the noise when I, you know, turn one direction or the other is better, but I got this other crazy noise now. Well, you guys are like totally incompetent. And it was such a simple thing of putting a vacuum hose in the back of a little clamp or front of a little clamp.
Hey, Carm here, and coming up, Dave shares his thoughts on repairing Teslas. Hey, the Virtual Apex Experience 2020 is in the record books and brought the best and the brightest together to create an experience like no other. I was so impressed with the breadth of topics and world-class trainers who presented at Virtual Apex. And Virtual Apex, well, they delivered on their commitment to the service professional and provided seminars dedicated to technician and business management training. And Joe's Garage and Repair Shop HQ highlighted the commitment Apex has to the service professional. The great news is that all of this was recorded and it's available on demand on the virtual platform until December 5th. So if you earn your living in the aftermarket and you value training, product demos, and meeting your industry peers, Apex 2021 will be your best destination. Mark your calendar right now for Apex 2021. It'll be November 2nd through the 4th in Las Vegas. Be there for the great homecoming. Listen right here to learn when you can start registering. Hey, today's pandemic is causing so much stress and uncertainty for everyone right now, especially shop owners. Now, how do I make sure that my staff and my customers stay protected while still moving cars through the bays? Contactless service is our new normal, and having a shop management system that not only supports this, but actually helps your business thrive through it all is key. Shopware's digital workflow with remote pay will provide that solution for you. Amy Matnett from Auto Craftsman recently commented on social media, and I quote, "I can't even express how grateful I am that I jumped on board with Shopware on January 1st. Would have never guessed that I would be the only one writing service at my shop, as I haven't worked in the shop for the last 15 years. But she goes on and says, I'm running my shop nonstop every day with Shopware to help me not only get the job done easier and faster, but am totally wowing my customers." End quote. Hey, if you want to wow your customers too, request a demo at getshopware.com. Your point earlier was to go on the offensive, not defensive. Do you find that enough shops are doing that when they get a comeback?
In our management classes at Delphi, which, you know, Barry actually helped write, I mentioned Barry Hoyland, Pam Oakes, another mover shaker in the industry, she helped write them. So it's been a lot of shop owners, including myself, even though I didn't own it. My dad owned it, but I ran it part of the time for him. We typically are onto that. We pick up the customer. You got to like let the customer feel that they're right, even though they're not, at least initially. But when you have shop owners that were techs for years, maybe a little burnout, you know, you got to fire the customer sometimes. I hear that in training classes all the time. I got to fire the customer. And sometimes that's true. But more often than not, it's you could retain that customer if you just kind of thought how they're thinking. It's not always trying to get something for nothing. There are those customers that want to get something for nothing, and you do need to push them away and let them go somewhere else, hopefully. We get on the defensive because we were techs, and we know we do good work, and we sometimes downplay our mistakes, don't care to bring them up. I bring all my mistakes up. I try to, not all of them. A lot of them I don't even remember. But I try to make any goofed up thing I do as a professional do-it-yourselfer, still working on cars, working on rental cars for course development, working occasionally with another shop in the area that asks for help, working my own vehicles, any chance I get. And I make plenty of mistakes. To me, they're teachable nuggets, Carm. If I can't help somebody else with my mistake, it was a waste of pain.
Dave, comebacks are a fact of life. And as in the great instance, the example, the case study that you just brought to us, I put the hose on the wrong side of the clip. It's so easy for it to happen. And yet we eat humble pie because of that. You know, for sure, it was our problem. And the percentage, I'm going to assume the percentages of that's, and again, I don't know any stats at all, but don't throw tomatoes through your speaker when I say this, but I'm going to say that the comebacks are probably more on the side of 51% that there are problems. Why? There's so many things that could go wrong inside of a repair.
Right. And sometimes we have an opinion that there is no way in the world when we put a new battery in or we fix a hub bearing that this other symptom could pop up. And today we know that so many things are intertwined. So many systems are interdependent. With ADIS, for example, I talk about using your turn signals. If you don't use your turn signals, you'll have issues with lane keep assist, where the electric power steering tries to fight you changing lanes. And so your customer might blame the tie rod you replaced or the alignment you did. And they just, for whatever reason, don't use their turn signals as much. Maybe some different driver got behind the wheel. They change lanes. ADAS is on. Lane keep assist is on. And it fights them. And so they think you did something wrong. So we have to then educate the customer in that regard. It's not really a comeback. But there are things that, I mean, you put in a new fuel pump, and now the car runs. Now the car also has a new sending unit for the fuel gauge. Well, the sending unit on the old fuel pump may not have worked, and they neglected to not tell you because they think the least I tell the tech or the service advisor, the less time it will take to get my car fixed, and the less cost there will be. And of course, we all know that's just the opposite. So they didn't tell us, in addition to no start, for the last 2 years, they haven't had a working sending unit. So now you put a new sending unit along with the fuel pump, so it runs, you're a hero, until now the new sending unit working allows the computer to run the evap monitor because it knows the fuel level. Now it can run the evaporative emissions monitor. So you don't think you putting in the new fuel pump has anything to do with check engine light for an evap problem. Service advisor absolutely might not, especially if they're really good at sales and people and they're just okay at car technology. They're not like a former tech who's now a service advisor, and they know the relationship between a fuel pump sending unit and running the EVAP monitor for a small leak. But a lot of them don't. And so then you get into my gals in the shop are really sharp. They didn't cause this, and the rest is history with that.
Dave, in your training, are you covering quality controls, you know, going over the job that was done? In your case, you would have never seen, you know, the opposite side of the clip where the hose went. I don't think anyone would have had a chance to go in there, up there, and inspected that. But in so many of the other jobs that we do, I remember doing a comeback show. God, it's got to be maybe 2 years ago, and the quality, the QC, was what many shop owners said helped prevent a lot of comebacks.
Oh, it does. And in this particular case, I heard the noise backing out of the driveway. So, you know, I knew I had to do something. I knew I did something wrong. I was hoping it was just some, you know, glaze on the brake rotors because it sat for a couple days while I did the work. You know, after my wife drove it, then the next day, I knew it wasn't that case. So it's like, okay, time to go in there and fix it.
And wait a minute. She said to you, what do you do for a living?
We're talking about a gal who once said, when I was struggling with a brake-by-wire issue in a Prius for the very first time, I didn't know how it worked. So I had to study up and basically educate myself on Prius braking systems, which is very much a Rube Goldberg, overly complicated and expensive system. And this one module that I suspected was bad, but not suspected confidently enough to spend $1,200 wholesale for a new one. So I wanted to make sure it was right. And being a weekend warrior traveling, working on Saturdays on my own car, you know, you can tell it turned into a month project, just being very thorough and doing, especially when I had a Toyota hotline guy, friend of mine, tell me, oh, you got these other two codes too, besides the module brain dead code. Go after a relay or a wiring issue. So I was like making sure that guy wasn't right on that, because I didn't want to spend $1,200 for a module and it's a wiring issue. So this had taken a month, and my wife says, honey, why don't you call the dealer? I'm sure they know what they're doing. And I said, would you like to have two attorneys for the divorce, or can we use one? And then she said, oh, baby, I'm just trying to get you motivated, even if I have to get you mad a little bit. I'll hold the flashlight. I'll do anything. I said, find one of these parts cheap. I'm going to try it. So we have a pride. That's the thing. We have to have confidence to a level like a fighter pilot. Fighter pilot goes up in their F-16 or their F-35 Raptor, and they have to have the attitude, I don't care what the other pilot's in, what weapons they have, I can shoot them down, period. Technicians have to know in their heart and have the training and the tools and the confidence in themselves that whatever car pulls in the drive at the shop, whatever problem, I can fix it. I may get some help. I need to get a subscription to factory service manual, but I can fix it. That kind of confidence is healthy and necessary, but it also is a two-edged sword. Then we can get a little prideful, not just confident, but prideful, and take it personal if a customer comes back, especially with a crazy story, is, I don't know what you did, but I changed lanes now, and this steering tie rod's a piece of crap. You guys know what you're doing. And they're simply not using their turn signal. So you assume, so it's like that ADA story where it's trying to fight you changing lanes because it doesn't know you want to change lanes. And so the customer's just on another wild goose chase, going to waste my time. I did the job right. I'm confident in that. And that's how the conversation begins. And that's usually how the relationship ends with the customer.
Isn't our job to educate the customer with this highly technical vehicle, and with all that is going on, there are going to be mistakes.
It's called practicing medicine if we were doctors, but we're not allowed to make mistakes, and that's frustrating. I totally get you folks that are listening and watching. I totally get your frustration. I've walked into shoes. I hang out with you. I'm on social media with you, and live classes and webinars and so forth in the last few months. And I hear it over and over again. I've lived it. I get it. But we got to forge on. I can guarantee you those doctors making those, you know, six digits, they're also getting this kind of crap. And sometimes they got to fire their patients as well.
Yeah, I like it. The doctor said, hey, listen, we'll put you on this drug for 2 or 3 weeks. Then I'll do your blood test and we'll find out how you're doing with it. And then I want you to come back in a month and tell me how you're experiencing this, this, or that. That was an experiment.
Yeah, it's practice, practicing medicine. But we do have a higher expectation because it's just a car. It's not as mysterious as a human body. Right.
Are you kidding me? I can go on YouTube and figure this out. What's the big deal? Let's try to cover that second topic, aftermarket right to repair, before we leave here on this episode.
I just got to give some kudos to Donnie Safer. This guy is a shop owner, kind of like my shoes, only instead of leaving the family business and went into the private or the corporate world like I did with Delco Electronics, Delphi Technologies. Now, he kept there when his dad's shop took over, and yet he's out there with ASA, he's out there with the NAFTA, National Automotive Service Task Force, and helping the aftermarket get access to this stuff. Of course, the Right to Repair Act was signed into law a few years ago in the state of Massachusetts. Maine, if I remember my history, the state of Maine had one, and before the governor signed it, I believe, the OEMs kind of talked at some step in the process before it became actual law, put it that way. The OEM stepped up and said, hey, you know what, we're just going to do this memorandum of understanding, a voluntary thing where, just like in the state of Massachusetts, where if you're an independent garage owner, you have to get access. The OEMs have to supply service manual, shop instructions, schematics, bulletins, and access to tools, including the software, for scan tools, for programming, to the aftermarket, just like they do the dealership. They can charge a fee for it. And they even set into this memorandum of understanding, which NAFTA and Donnie were very helpful in getting that all put together. They stipulated there'd be even a process where if there was a schematic missing or a file to scan a certain car and a scan tool software program not working functionally, that there was like a grievance process where the OEMs had to respond and get the independent garage folks back up and running with the same information or nearly the same information that dealers have. So that has been a huge, huge help, Carm. And so kudos to all the OEMs except one. And I don't mean to ruffle feathers or anything, but I'm curious. Elon Musk, let us know why. Maybe there's some wisdom behind it. Maybe you're concerned about electrocution or whatever with the Teslas. But Tesla doesn't seem to have any kind of connection in with this. If you go to, I believe to this day, if you go to OEM One Stop, which is a sidebar or sister or daughter website to NASTF.org, National Automotive Service Task Force, nobody can remember that one. So they have OEM, the number one, the word stop.com. And you go there, I don't believe Tesla's on the list. So I think I've heard stories that, well, they're electric vehicles, so they can kind of dodge a lot of stuff because they're not producing emissions. I also heard it was because it's not required in the state of Massachusetts, or only in the state of Massachusetts. Other states don't require that, so it's like more of a voluntary memorandum of understanding application. But I'm just curious. I'm not wanting to, you know, say anything negative. It's like, okay, maybe to the head, not Elon. He's a hero. He's like Tony Stark, only real world, you know, Rocket Man to me. But it's like whoever runs the automotive service side, what's the reason? We'd love to. These cars are going to get miles on them, and there are going to be some independents that are going to be probably maybe as good if they give them the chance working on Tesla that the dealer is.
We just did a Tonal Academy, and we talked about the EV mandate in 2035 in California. And part of the dialogue that came out of that was, you know, think of Rivian coming on. I mean, all these new electric car platforms, if they don't want to take the expense of building a dealer network, they're going to have to. They could put as many mobile techs as they want, but they can't sell enough vehicles where people can be confident that they could be repaired. I think the more access the industry has, people have to EV platforms, the more they're going to have to rethink the consumer's level of happiness to get a vehicle repaired.
It's a liability thing, I'm sure. I know of power electronics manufacturers who when they thought about selling their products on the aftermarket, were concerned with, you know, is a person qualified to put it on? You know, it's high voltage.
Then listen, certify me. I'll take all your tests. I'll show you I have all the right equipment. I'll tell you that I know I've got this ASE over here. Whatever. But it's almost like I don't want to be a franchise repair center, but I'll qualify under your specs. Forget about the fact that we're smart enough to realize that we have to invest in time and training and maybe some certifications. I don't know why my gut says it's going to happen, but of course Tesla has been fighting it for so long, but they've been around a long time. People are chasing them. How's the next person who's going to come out with a Tesla, an answer to Tesla, going to be different than them? Well, access to repair, access to a place to
yes.
go to.
I think that will be actually a feather in their cap rather than a liability nightmare, especially the certification program. But the key on that is now the OEM or the OEM tier one parts provider like Delphi has to come up with manpower that can put together the certification programs, the training programs that then the aftermarket can get access to. And then that's the proverbial, where are we going to come up with these people and this budget? And so then it becomes an implementation challenge to make that happen.
Now, we're recording this in the first, second week of November. And in 2020 Election Day, the right to repair Massachusetts, the new item that was on the ballot, did pass, as hard as OE went after that.
I didn't know. So what happened this election cycle in Massachusetts? What's different?
I can't exactly explain it right now on the edge of my seat here, but it was another OE challenge not to have the telematics information.
Oh, yes.
There was the right to repair, and this was about data access, right to repair data access, and it passed.
Back to we own the software and you drive the car, kind of like, you know, Microsoft with you own the computer, but we own the software that's on your computer.
But the software produces data. We feel is an aftermarket that as tech moves down the highway, Dave, you're going to need access to this in order to fix the car. You know, they're worried about the privacy of it. So secure vehicle interfacing, as it is continuing to move forward, that's going to be a big component to this.
Yeah, because there are people doing data mining and marketing based on telematics information and so forth. And I can see your head-up display turning into, you know, how you get on the internet and you get ready to look at your email and you got like, would you like to see these celebrities, what they look like when they were 5 years old? And you got to, you know, there's one person you're interested in, but you got to go through like 38 or 90 slides of other celebrities you're not interested in. And all the way you get all these ads popping up.
I wouldn't waste my time.
Well, that's what they want to put on your windshield just about with a head-up display. As you're driving, you know, Eat at Joe's and so forth is popping up. That can also, like, we know where you drove from your telematics information. So we know you did drive past the Eat at Joe's drive-in restaurant. So you're going to get that ad on your smartphone or your watch.
If anyone would know, you would, because, of course, what Delphi Technologies, you're still probably working heavy with OEs, right?
Oh, definitely. We're as much as ever big into power electronics as well as, you know, gas and diesel, anything gas and diesel powertrain related.
Never forget seeing you at a training class at Apex 2 or 3 years ago as I stood in the back of the room watching you, you know, send all these components around the room and LIDAR and radar and all that neat stuff. It's fascinating, the industry. Listen, we've run out of time, but you're going to come back. We're going to do some more of these topics, kind of, if you will, these great little mini Dave Hobb wisdom podcasts as you bring your particular and wonderful view of the challenges and the opportunities we have in this great aftermarket of ours.
Love to share the lessons from the school of hard knocks with other techs that learn the same way.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.